Hello. Okay. I didn't do anything like the talk before because I thought it was the last talk of the day, so I don't really have like columns and columns of code that I have no clue what it's on about. I'm also rather knackered because I came back from Singapore yesterday, which is like a 30 degrees difference to here, and also my flat looked like shit, so I had to clean it up for a while. And that was the first swearing that I promised not to do. So today I'm going to talk about HTML5 and how we can, you can think about it, how to trust it. Because HTML5 is going through a bit of a phase right now. And funny enough, this phase happens with every technology. It's called the hype cycle. Every time a new technology comes out, everybody gets immensely excited about it, talks utter nonsense about it, and promises you everything that it does. And then we go into this disillusionment cycle, where we're like, actually, it doesn't do the things that we were promised. And then we actually start to get enlightened about it, and okay, this is actually what it does, and then it becomes productive. Then we can actually use that technology. Everything that I encountered in the history of my web development or development cycle was the same thing. Every time something new comes out, this is the big thing, this will be the end of everything. I remember when Cold Fusion was sold to me as the really cool new thing to come out. And then PHP got PHP 5, and that means it's not a language anymore, that's completely random. Which was a lie as well. And nowadays everything has to be written in Python, everything has to be in Ruby, we do SAS for this. Every new technology solves every problem, and then we realize it doesn't. So I'm happy that the cycle is over. I'm happy that we actually start thinking and questioning HTML5. Because when HTML5 came out, it was the big thing, and like, oh, this is so cool. So we built all these demos that just were really awkward. They were massive. They're like, oh, look, you can now put a video on every side of a rotating cube. Because that's what every client needs. You know, you can have like a 3D world where you can go into a shopping mall and buy things and put them in your basket, which we started with Verve in 1997. And back then it didn't make sense because we didn't have any touch interfaces or actually haptic feedback. And we built all these things to impress, and all the Flash guys were sitting back like, but it's slower than Flash 5 years ago. How is that cool? You're like, oh, Apple killed you. Nobody needs Flash anymore. And we reinvent the same things over and over and over again. So I'm happy we're not doing that right now. Because the big problem was that a lot of these demos were also doing it very wrong from the very beginning. This is a joke slide that's been going around for a long, long time. That like, is it HTML5? Test it in Internet Explorer. It doesn't work, then it's HTML5. That means you're doing HTML5 wrong. That means you're using HTML5 like you would use Flash, or you would use any new technology. HTML5 is just an evolution of HTML, which should be working everywhere. Now, the definition is what is working. That's the big thing. I mean, I said it before, that when people build new things right now, and then they say the argument, I would love to use HTML5, but my clients are all on Internet Explorer 6, and I can't use that rotating cube with videos on each side of Internet Explorer 6. Yes, you can. You can actually just make something work in Internet Explorer 6 and make it beautiful and better in better browsers. I said it before, the love that we give outdated browsers is necrophilia. Internet Explorer 6 has to die, it has to go away. The same way that the Android stock browser has to go away and be replaced by Chrome, or even better, by Firefox. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So, the other big problem is that we're working in environments where we have these fat connections and these really cool computers. I just came back from Singapore, as I said, and I met all the volunteers from Asia, in like Indonesia and Myanmar, and all these countries that you just found the globe before. And I did a training there and put up my Mac, and I'm like, hey, this works on a Mac, and nobody had a Mac. Not a single person in the room, and I was like, okay, like, there's a different world out there. We're building on these wonderful devices and these fast connections. Well, not really in the city of London, but in fast connections normally. And that's why we build these things. This is the Beetle website of the car, an 18 Mac website, just for some animations and some car flashing and a nice parallax scrolling. And we complained when flash sites a few years ago had like 5-minute loaders and preloaders and tunnels. We do the same thing now with Canvas. We shouldn't do that. Of course, we're simulating native environments. That's the big thing about HTML5 as well. Like, oh, it has to be like iPhone. No, it has to be like Android. Oh, it has to be like iPhone, Android. I love taking my Android phone out and somebody uses the JavaScript library that gives me an iOS interface. Because these two back buttons that do different things is really what I wanted. That's exactly what the web is about. Like, instead of giving me the interface that works on my device, instead of simulating something else. Because if you simulate, you promise. You do that promise of the same performance. And you can't get that because you don't have access to the hardware that the native code has. It's like, I don't know if you go to Heathrow a lot, but there's this lift that has 3 buttons. Nice raised buttons with like colors that do fuck off. You just see tourists going in like they don't do anything. And this is what you do with these interfaces. You promise functionality that is not there. But functionality could be much better if you gave it an interface that would be honest. It's the same with like all these like wooden backgrounds and like leather backgrounds, like the calendar in OS X. Like, I understand I can rip it off, but coming back from nowhere and going back into the calendar, that's not natural, that's just wrong. So we're working for this hipster environment, you know, like these like, oh, all the cool kids with the newest iPhone, like, oh, iPhone 5, I'm not going to build things anymore because all of these just bought the newest little iPad thing. They have this newest, coolest stuff we all want to carry anymore. And it just drives me nuts because this is the Furby of the new time. People build these like little things that everybody needs to have, and these apps are like used for 2 minutes at a time. Most of the apps that make money are these like when you buy them drunk, like, oh, fart, 99 cents, I have that one. And my colleague wrote a really nice blog post, The False Economy of Apps, telling a bit about the, okay, you can make money with apps really quickly, but you have to be above in the top 100 apps, otherwise nobody finds you. So the new SEO is the name of your app, so call it like !! AAA, so at least in an alphabetical list, you will be the first app. But you have to sell a lot of apps to make money, because you sell them for $1.50. So there's a new market coming, and a lot of people are not aware of this, and it actually gives me like flashbacks, because I used to do interactive TV stuff for Sky when I came to England first. And there was WML on some set-top box that didn't work at all. We had like cat flaps with like different receivers, so we actually could use the same controller for each of them. It was just awful. But if you look at Anna Debenham's talk at Full Frontal, she talked to teenagers, and she found out that 95% of them have an internet connection at home, of sorts. Again, it could be the city of London. Only 10% have a smartphone, because these things are expensive. And kids break things, so parents don't do that. Like, they get an old phone probably, but they all have these little phones for texting and playing loud music on the bus. And they all have 44% have a computer. So the smartphone is the next thing for the next generation, man. That's the only thing we should concentrate on about. That's what the Apple fanboys keep telling me, like there's nothing else but the iPhone out there. Well, they have 69% of them have a handheld game thingy, like Engage or whatever, and 86% have a game console, like an Xbox 360, PlayStation, whatever. And these have browsers in them, and those little bastards surf on those things. You know, they use these controllers to go up left and right. It's like, oh, the internet is available on these machines. That is incredible. But the processors in interactive TVs and stuff are 256 meg of RAM and 600 megahertz processors. Good fun. How much fun is that? So there's a whole new market for that. And good luck with the native apps, because there's not going to be a native platform for PlayStation to build apps on it. They want to make money with their games. But the web can do that. The web technologies are there for everybody on the web to have something, to get something. And if that's a little texting that's easy to control with a game controller, why not? That's my colleague Mike Davies, who is like notorious for his rants, but he wrote a really good article on apps lately, and he said like the web is the platform agnostic, and its success isn't chained to the continued success of a specific platform. So I've been a web developer for 14 years. I've seen so many platforms come and go. With the web, I made money. I'm not rich. I'm not like founder and these kind of things. But I made money and I had fun and I built things. And the web will be there no matter what you do. And also what he says is like, this platform independence characteristic is a feature of the web, not a shortcoming. It's not meant to emulate operating system graphical widgets. That's the browser's job or the operating system's job, not the web stacks. What this means is like all these interfaces that look like iOS that are written in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript are actually failing because they will never be as performant. They actually give it to the wrong browser, you give it the wrong operating system because you cannot detect them reliably. And it's up to the browser to give you the proper widgets. Like on Hacker News 2 days ago, a date picker was number one. A date picker, input type date, has been in browsers for 3 years now or something. It's not really supported in all of them because people build these widgets themselves instead of complaining to the browser that this should be the job of the browser to do. $5 about this stuff. Don't build 10,000 libraries around it. So the big scary thing, of course, is when people talk about fragmentation. Oh my God, fragmentation. There's like different mobile phones out there, maybe with different power and different connectivity. Fragmentation is awful. We all should have one phone, like issued by the government with block pornography. Fragmentation has been around forever. And in software, in anything. When people tell me Flash was awesome because there was no fragmentation, they never built anything with Flash. Because every user had a different version of Flash installed, and you needed a new thing in the other one. You couldn't tell people just to upgrade because they were behind some firewall and they could update every 3 months or something like that. Fragmentation is something we have to deal with. And it's good. Why should I be forced to get a new phone every few months? Even in iOS, there's fragmentation now. So when the next new little iOS thing will get a retina display, good luck finding out the resolution on that thing without having to buy it, and that's so cheap, no problem. So, it's the internet. The internet is fragmented because it's there for everybody. It's not a channel, it's a medium. A media where I can use my old computer from 5 years ago. I had this desktop at home and I hadn't started in 3 years or so. It must be longer because the original browser in there was Phoenix, the thing before Firefox. And I'm like, whoa, why do I have this thing? But it's still available on the web now. I can use it. And I should be allowed to use it. Somebody in Africa should have a smartphone connected to some service on the web and get some data with an SMS service. The web is there for everybody and we should support as much as we can in the right way and in the best way possible. So the bleeding edge will always make you hurt. You will always hurt yourself at the bleeding edge, even when it's a cling film thing. So a lot of technology that we were promised at the beginning of HTML is a pain to introduce right now. It's a pain to use. Like Jay Archibald's application cache, the douchebag talk, is a good example for that, that shows how broken application cache is at the moment. But this is just happening because we're reinventing, we're doing new things. We need your feedback, we need your problems. We don't need people to bitch about it that it's broken. We need to know why it's broken and what's happening so we can fix it. And once we fix it, it's going to be much better. The cool thing about it is that it's not really that much of a long thing anymore. We are on this ride. The web as a platform is coming. 5, 6, 7 big technology companies I work with are all betting on HTML5. It will come, no matter what, how much you try to make it not come. So it will be part of it. You're already on that ride. All the browsers are now evergreen browsers. They update every few weeks. I've written blog posts about like, this is broken like a half a year ago, and now I have to change that blog post because every browser fixed it by now. Every 6 weeks, there's a new browser. I love it when people come up, like when the press comes out, oh, Firefox comes out tomorrow, we already know what's coming in the browser. And like, yeah, it's called Nightly. Anybody can subscribe to that? Anybody can go to FTP and download it? All of that stuff is open. So it's running, it's happening there. And the thing is, if you don't want to be part of it, you don't have to be. It's totally fine if you want to do only iOS things for only iPod. Fine, totally, make money, be successful. I'd be happy if you do. But stop talking about other technologies badly then. and stop saying that your environment that you chose for you only to concentrate on is the only thing that makes sense for everybody, because that's not the truth. If I build an iOS app for example, for healthcare in Africa, that's not going to be used by anybody. If I do this as an SMS service, it's going to make a difference. So, the same with HTML, guys. If we bitch about something that is on native, why would we do that? Why would you spend your time bad-mouthing a technology that you're not using? It's a way of selling it, but a really lame way of selling it. It's like going for a design pitch and saying like, oh, look at that logo that the other company did. That's really shit. We don't do that. You can do that once or twice, but it's just a lie. It's just boring to me. It's not that complex to get in love with HTML5 and start understanding what's going on there. It's a few steps. So, the HTML5 101 plan. I was asked by the .NET magazine that's going to come out on Monday or something to do like 5 mistakes in HTML5 that we did that we shouldn't be doing in 2013 anymore. So it's a powerful thing, HTML5, and we use it completely wrong. Much like getting a lightsaber and pointing it in your face is the first thing. First, HTML5 is not the iPhone. All the original tutorials, all the demo tricks, all of them targeted iPhone. Because iPhone was the thing that made HTML5 work. Out of a sudden, people were like, whoa, this is really cool. People buy that by the truckload. That's a really cool phone. It's wonderful to use after 3 or 4 generations. And it's a good thing, it really works. And it's the first time that an environment is there for HTML5. Write clean HTML. HTML5 has a parser that is incredibly forgiving. It's just amazing what you can put in a browser and it will do something with it. But that should not be a carte blanche for doing that. We still, the code that the computer gets is irrelevant because it will do something with it. The code that I need to read that you wrote last week is a different issue. So always write code as if the guy maintaining your code is like a maniac with an axe that knows where you live. So make sure you leave clean stuff behind, because you might be the guy having to maintain it 2 years later and thinking like, what have I done there? Offline. Be offline. Do whatever you can in HTML5 apps to make them work offline as well. And native apps as well. The British Airways app. Every time I go to the airport and I'm not connected in some country, it doesn't have wireless and I have no data plan, it crashes every single time you start it. Which is really cool if your boarding pass is on it and they don't let you through because you don't have a printer with you where you could connect it to your phone and print it out, right? So if your app doesn't work offline, it should not be a modern app, I'm sorry. This thing should be useful when I'm in the train where we still don't have any wireless or connectivity in the city of London. It should be mobile friendly, no 18 meg apps, things that actually run nicely on that phone and actually download quickly. Because we're busy, it's a different environment. We're not waiting for the desktop for like 5 minutes and go for a cup, but we basically, my God, this is not coming. The amount of people getting stressed with their phone is wonderful, especially when you see them in maps, they go out in the city like, why is it not working? You're like, you know this goes to space and back for you. This is like Star Trek in your friggin' pocket, and you're complaining that it takes 2 seconds longer. But this is the kind of time we have, you know, we're like, oh my God, I want to have this. So, HTML5 can evolve, and it can change, and it has to be different from environment to environment. If your website looks the same on every device, in every connectivity, you've done it wrong. You've given everybody a bad experience and not the people the right experience. You release the JPEG, that's the only way you can do it actually to make it look the same everywhere except for the color. As you can see here. So, more things to know. These are the 5 things to fix. JavaScript is here to stay. I'm sorry? Anybody of you who comes from a higher background and says JavaScript can't be used? No, we won. I'm sorry. It's there, it will stay, it's in the browser, it's in every browser, and it will be the thing to use. Yes, CoffeeScript might be nicer, yes, jQuery might be easier, but you saw these consoles and you heard the specs. They're not going to render a whole library to have a little animation thing that you could do in a little JavaScript yourself. It is there to stay, so learn it. Please learn JavaScript. I'm tired of interviewing people who actually come in and say they're JavaScript developers and only know jQuery, and I show the source code of Firefox and they just run out. That's a waste of everybody. Don't use things that are broken. This is about prefixes. Browser prefixes are there to test things out. They will hurt you. They lie to you. They will steal your pocket money. They will beat you up. They will call your mom and say you are naughty. These are just there to test things out in browsers. And if you want to do that and help browsers out, thank you. If you want to put them in production without putting a non-prefix version or other browser prefixes in there, you're a bastard. Because you're adding to the landfill that is already on the web of broken websites that need a certain browser. We all hate Internet Explorer 6, especially because we have to use it for like room booking systems and holiday systems and these kind of things. The reason is these were built in 1999 when Internet Explorer 6 was the end all of technology. Nothing will ever be better than this. That's why we built these back then. And now we build the same things for iOS, and it's outdated half a year later. So prefixes could hurt you. Do a non-prefix version, then put the prefixes in to make it work if you want to. Also have a fallback. The amount of white buttons with white text on the web, because the only background they have is WebKit Gradient, which is outdated and doesn't even work on the new ones anymore. It's just terrible. So have just a simple fallback for everything and you'll be fine. The browser is the development environment. A lot of people go complaining that, yeah, I would love to do HTML, but I don't have something cool as Eclipse. You know, I have too much hard drive space. I need like 6 gig of IDE before I start writing my first line of code. The browser is the development environment and the consumption environment. How cool is that? That all the browsers, every single one of them now has development tools in there that allow us to debug in the browser, that allow us to develop in the browser, that allow us to life change in the browser. I can't access my computer here, but it would have shown you some cool things in there. Play with the console, play with the text edit modes, play with remote debugger. I can write code on my desktop and see the change on my tablet or my mobile phone instead of having it to send over to the mobile phone, and I can change it live in the browser on my computer, which is much, much easier to use than typing it in on Droid Edit or something like that. Build in HTML5 and render it out to native. This works. PhoneGap allows you to build and take an HTML5 thing and make it look like a native app. Okay, performance might be not as good, but for most games, and most like casual games, and most to-do apps, you won't need that stuff. Be aware that you can turn HTML5 into anything. An iOS app or an Android app, you cannot turn back into HTML5. That's a different story. So you start with something that is available for every platform to come, not for something that is just hot at the moment. And Mike said that as well. While web app ninjas complain about their tools environments, entrepreneurs create these applications with the web stack. He talked about things like Firefox being XML, JavaScript, and CSS. Didn't know many people would know that. But yes, most of the JavaScript, most development of browsers nowadays is done in JavaScript, not in C++ or anything like that. We're already past that. So we built these web apps for years and years already. We just have to have a better format now for the web and a distribution in place. So let's end with the coolest stuff that's coming right now. Splendid stuff that's in the making, some of it ready, some of it not. First thing is we have a problem that we get all these cool things. We get these smartphones that have all these cool things in there, like cameras and like accelerometers and like whatever, everything that is in there. And then as JavaScript developers, we get told, nah, not for you. You gotta write something different. We use PhoneGap. Ha ha ha. We don't give it to you. And it's unfair. That's just not right. Why should I not get access to their hardware? Because I don't want to write another language. It's fine. It works, you know? So we built these things called, we defined those standards called web APIs. And this is basically an explosion of a phone showing all the things that's in there. And it shows all the cool things it can do, and next to it are red and green buttons. The green ones say, this works. This is a standard in JavaScript that's defined, that's implemented in Firefox. The red ones, not so much yet, but you can help us with that. So we did decide to shame us into getting this thing really quickly out there. And we have the APIs. They can be used to other browsers as well if they wanted to. We work with other browser makers to get these things standardized. And it makes a lot more sense than just saying, oh, you need to be our browser to do that. And we put that all together in Firefox OS. Firefox OS is going to be the first completely open source operating system for mobile phones. Written in HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript, running apps in HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript. That interface is HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript. You can run it in the browser. You can develop it in the browser. You can send it over to the phone to test it out. There's no closed technology in there. It all is hackable. It all can be worked by you. And there's a good emulator right now as well. And until next year, we would start setting those. And this is a phone running on HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript. There's a Linux core there, the web APIs to get me access to the hardware, and the rest is web technologies. This means this thing will be really affordable, and it means it will bring web connectivity to people in markets that can't afford an Android or an iOS phone. So South America is the first market where Telefonica is going to sell those phones. Together, well, we just built the software, they built the hardware, well, they don't, but somebody does, and they distribute the phones. And we all have a marketplace where you can sell your HTML5 apps. And again, it's interesting, because we did research with the market there. Everybody in South America wanted to have a radio in their phone to listen to radio. I have no idea people want that, but this is cool. This is finding out what people need, and this is bringing web connectivity to people who can't afford it at the moment, and that's just not right. Everybody should be on the web and should be allowed to say bad things about their government. Another thing, we talked about these interfaces being simulated in JavaScript, like combo boxes, date pickers, things that don't work. Yet, there's a standard called Web Components initiated by Mozilla and by Google. And we built a library called Xtag, which allows you to write that markup to build things like accordions, to build things like maps, to build things like interactive books, all of them natively in the browser, not with some jQuery library that somebody wrote and doesn't want to maintain half a month later. There's also a web game stub. If you just want to start an HTML5 canvas game, a jump and run game, you can download that one and start playing with that. And there's Mortar, which is a brick and mortar blueprint for an application running on Firefox OS or Chrome or whatever other browser you want to use. But it does all the manifest file, all the minification and all these things for you. Everything on GitHub, everything, play with it. Google has a system called Neoman.io, which is a non-loading picture here, which is beautiful, which is a packaging system for the web. So it's a command line tool that allows you to actually build HTML5 applications and does all the spriting for you, does all the minification for you, all the conversion from SAS or less to CSS, and all these build things that you don't want to think about. It's a very, very heavy tool set, but it's very, very interesting. Adobe brackets was something that completely shocked me, because Adobe are these evil people that gave us Flash and don't want to give up, right? So they built this editor, lots of editors, lots of tools right now to build HTML5 with, because they realized it's the new thing and it makes sense, and they help a lot of Flash developers to come over to the light side as well. And brackets is a text editor. It's, well, a code editor in the browser. It also has live editing capabilities that while you change it, the browser automatically reloads without you having to go to the browser and reload and go back and forth all the time. It's also written in HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript to write HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript, which is a bit meta, but very, very cool. It's also the first open source product that Adobe has ever done. And it's not like ta-da source, like, well, here it is, play with it. It's real open source. It's like their plans are ready. You can actually see what's coming. Pull requests from the outside are taken on earlier than pull requests inside Adobe, so they promote people by that. They looked at the bugs that they have, and when they were simple bugs that are not blockers, they don't fix them. Instead, they tag them as starter bug, So if you want to start becoming part of that project, you get a simple bug to play with to get to know the project before you go to the heavier ones. So they did a really, really good job as rolling their first open source product out. And it's beautiful that they did that. I'm working on a new book idea called The Vanilla Web Diet, which basically explains how you can use all these cool things that our browser is now available to you instead of using 12,000 libraries and downloading 60,000 plugins that you don't know what they're doing. So there's a demo site which doesn't use any JavaScript at all, but looks like anything that you download with jQuery at the moment. So there's a few thinking in there, like, don't give everything to everybody, just give the right amount of code and the right amount of interface to the environment that can actually stomach it. And it's up to you to start thinking about that. We procrastinate. We're like, oh yeah, somebody's gonna come up with a great solution for that, so I'm not gonna do it. And as Sean Tan said in his book, today is the tomorrow you expected yesterday. You're already in charge if you want to. You can already be part of this. You can already impress people by just doing things that you thought were too easy, but a lot of people thought they were too easy. That's why they didn't do them. So don't hold back in your feedback. Don't hold back in your code. Think about that you're a part, you could be part of something bigger just by starting, not by hoping that somebody will do it in the future. There's a wonderful talk on TED about procrastination, and procrastination happens a lot of times because we don't want to feel stupid. In school, you waited until the last day to learn for a test. Because when you got a bad mark on that test, you just blamed that you didn't have time for it, and you basically only learned it quickly before the test. You already were afraid of failing in that test, that's why you actually waited till the last second, or you subconsciously you do. So procrastination is killing us. Not because we delay things, but actually stop ourselves from doing it properly. We don't want to, in school, we don't want to learn, we just want to do that test quickly instead of understanding what the test is about. Then the time frame would be unimportant because we would be so excited about learning it. So it's up to you to do these things now. So with that, thank you very much.